when we had Hal Lindsey here, and he presented his presentation on Tuesday night. And after he did his thing, and I don't remember what he talked about, but everybody started asking him questions about current events. And we went on and on and on. So as a result, we decided to have a night, which is Tuesday nights, unless something else comes up, like we had a debate one time. We always have this, and about 16, 17 years ago, you know, Bill Koenig came, and he was standing in the back, and we were over in the other hotel, and, you know, I found out who he was, and he's a Washington correspondent for his news service. And so I had him. I got him up to the front talking about current events, and we've had him ever since, pretty much. And so since he is a guy who follows, who lives in the Washington, D.C. area and has a pass to presidential hearings and things like that, part of the press corps there, then he's always up on a lot of the events that happen in Washington and around the world. And he's written a book or two, and he also has a newsletter that he updates once a day and stuff like that with current events relating to prophecy. So that's why we have him, and he wasn't able to come here this year, and so we're having him videoed in. Bill, are you ready?
Okay. Appreciate your meeting you all this evening. And we have a lot to cover. And we got the PowerPoint up there, Frank?
PowerPoint's good.
Okay. Will I be able to see it, or do I work off mine?
I don't think you can see it.
Okay, I'll just work off. Okay, perfect. I've got mine right here. Well, first slide there is, first of all, great to be with you all. And sorry I can't be there in person, but I've always had so many special times at pre-trip, so I'm sure you all will as well. We are living in an amazing day. There is just absolutely no doubt about it. And there's just so much going on right now. I mean, for the last hour and a half, I've just been getting leads and articles, things sent to me, texts to me about the election, about the coronavirus, about the vaccine, about China, about Gitmo. I mean, it's just been one thing after another. I've never seen anything like this. I've been doing this for over 20 years. I've never, ever seen so many things in play at the same time. And it's exciting because we know who's in control. And the God of Israel, our Lord, is in control. And I think we all long for Jesus to return, especially at a time such as this. It's it's just like no other. So the blessing is we've had the opportunity to probably live at the most exciting, significant time in biblical history. We've never had, again, so many things in play at the same time. So I'll hit four key areas tonight. I've got a video I want you to watch about how elections are stolen. That'll be about the fourth part of the presentation. But initially, I want to cover, okay, first of all, our website, you're probably familiar with that. That's watch.org. And the next slide, a copy of my book, Eye to Eye. We're now in the 28th or 29th printing of Eye to Eye. I updated it in August of 2017. 576 pages now and over 127 catastrophes that happened when we were applying pressure on Israel to divide their covenant land. And despite the fact that we've been a great friend of Israel throughout the centuries, especially throughout this century, You know, he's the land that God gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is not to be divided. Judea, Samaria is not to be an Arab state. And even well-meaning presidents, there's consequences when they attempt to divide the land. the next slide, this is kind of a summary of what I'll touch on tonight. Number one, the Trump Peace to Prosperity Plan that was delivered at the White House on January 28th. And then the Trump's Abraham Accords that was delivered actually at September 15th here at the White House in Washington. And then the eight hurricanes that happened in 2020, that all, most of those were record-setting events that all transpired at the time the Trump White House was working on the Abraham Accords and the Trump Peace to Prosperity Plan. When they weren't working on it, everything was relatively calm. Once they started working on it, atmospherically, things started getting disruptive again. And then we'll talk about the coronavirus global pandemic, what's taking place right now, and how this is all ushering in the one world order, the World Economic Forum reset, single currencies, electronic currencies, fintech, different currencies, Bitcoin, a lot of different things, gold, interest, but cashless society. I mean, these are just one part of many things that are happening quickly. And then the election 2020, I'll go into some details a little bit in the beginning, and then I'll share a 30-minute really insightful video that my friend Kevin Freeman there in Keller, Texas, put together, and it will be an eye-opener. So, to start with, let me get a sip of my Dallas Cowboy drink here. As you all know, we've never had a president that has done more for the state of Israel. And I like to, you know, phrase the fact that we've had a lot of presidents, excuse me, that have said they would move the embassy to Jerusalem. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama. They always said it. But there was every 6 months the president, the Jerusalem Act that was passed in 1995 by Congress, gave the president the option, if that was the time, every 6 months since 1995, and every 6 months, those presidents would say, well, the timing's not right. If we move the embassy to Jerusalem, things will break out in the Middle East. It just won't be good. It won't be good for the sake of the peace process. Well, Trump promised to do that, and he did it. And it was incredible because everybody was saying, oh, this is terrible. If Trump does this, the whole Middle East will catch fire. Former Secretary of State John Kerry said, oh, this is absolutely the worst. The whole Middle East will catch fire. This will just be the worst possible thing that President Trump could do. You also heard about that at the, through the State Department. 90% of the people at the State Department said this will be the biggest mistake Trump ever makes. Even the generals at the Pentagon were concerned about that. General Mattis thought that was going to be a big mistake. So Trump did it. He moved. He made a commitment and he moved. There's a little bit of protest around the world. The Arabs weren't too happy. Erdogan of Turkey had meetings, but for the most part, nothing happened. It was not an event. And then on May 14th of last year, the embassy was officially moved. Or 2 years ago, I'm sorry. 2 years ago, officially moved. And this was just an enormous thing. And yeah, I think that's right. I'm sorry. So, no American president has done more for Israel than all the presidents combined. That's Israel's claim to the Golan Heights. I'm sorry, that was 2018, 70th anniversary. Israel's right to the Golan Heights. President Trump did that. Secretary of State Pompeo stated that Israel's election of 1920. And that was huge. I mean, this is just a huge comment. I mean, we truly have a president, a secretary of state, and a vice president that are true friends of Israel. And then also President Trump took on the Iran nuclear deal. He said, this is a bad deal. We need to back out of that. So Vice President Pence was at the U.S. meeting on January 28th. Next slide. Senate briefing on coronavirus began with Lamar Alexander. The next slide, President Trump hosts Netanyahu and Gantz on January 27th in preparation for the next day when the Trump peace plan was going to be delivered. The next slide, Gantz promised Trump to support his peace deal. The next slide, Trump's deal of the century was presented with a map at the White House on January 28, 2020. The map, what's so unique about this map is this, George W. talked about a map, but no president had ever actually established a map. And right after President Trump gave his speech, within a half an hour or so, he posted his map on his Twitter site. At that time, he had 71.8 million on Twitter. Now he's around 88 million. And this was a map that superimposes the land of Israel, the Judea-Samaria map, or the Genesis 15:18 map. So this was very, very significant. Next slide. Within 44 minutes after President Trump's presentation and putting his map on Twitter, the Miami Financial District was hit with a 7.7 earthquake. The earthquake was between Cuba and Jamaica, but it was so forceful and powerful, it still shook the Miami Financial District. And what was interesting about this earthquake, it first came out as a 7.3. And a lot of times they come out high and then they drop them. Well, this one went from a 7.3 up to 7.7. And I studied patterns very closely, and I thought 7.7, 7.3, 7.7. Very interesting. Within a few minutes of President Trump putting his map on Twitter. Later that afternoon, Senator Cotton, coronavirus warnings to the White House, to the Secretaries of State, that we have a very significant problem. Next slide. Senator Cotton, the next day, warned President Trump of the magnitude of the coronavirus. And then later that day, the White House announced the formation of the Coronavirus Task Force. I wrote a commentary right after this, shortly thereafter, and I wrote on what life was like for President Trump prior to his peace plan being delivered. God's favor, things are going well, economic boom, so many things working for him, and then what was life like in America after the plan was delivered. And I might add, coronavirus, which eventually locked down 3.5 billion people worldwide, as soon as Trump delivered his plan, the international community back there, they said, no, we have the plan. We have the UN plan. UN Resolution 242. France, Germany, Italy, Spain all said, no, we have the plan. It's a two-state plan. We will not go with this plan. So what happened is Trump established his plan. The international community once again established their plan, and the rest is history. The coronavirus spread throughout the world, a pandemic. And I believe that this is also judgment against our country for the moral direction, the lack of morals our country has been going in, the LGBT marriage, same-sex marriage, abortion, and a lot of other things. But the trigger was the land of Israel. Because the before and after, life in America is distinctively different. And afterwards, the schools are shut, theaters are shut, bars are shut, movies aren't being made, the colleges that hate Christians and conservatives, a lot of them aren't even open, and the students are having school online. And the fashion industry was devastated. So when you look at the surgical hit, and unfortunately a lot of people have been impacted, even innocent Christians, whether it's reigning just and unjust, have also paid a great price for the coronavirus. So, okay, next slide. The Abraham Accords, there was 8 hurricanes this year. 5 record setters, all taking place at the time of Abraham Accords documentation, Abraham Accords efforts. I won't hit all of them. We have them on our website, every single one of them. This was every time the land was mentioned, a storm would start, or a storm would hit. This one was very interesting. On September 15th, when the Abraham Accords was delivered to the White House, a hurricane named Sally was the other news. This photo shot here gives you an idea. There was 2 major news stories that day on September 15th, the Abraham Accords, and then the latest on Hurricane Sally. And then the next day, Kushner is talking about the plan, hoping other nations will join the pact, talking about the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. And at the same time, Sally is hitting the southern Gulf Coast and Pensacola with record rains. And next slide. What's interesting about Sally, I, a lot of times there's a connection with the name and the hurricane. Sally derives from the Hebrew word Sarah. So was Hurricane Sally a rebuke to the Abraham Accords? And I thought to myself, you know, this thing could have been called a lot of different names. But it happened to come ashore, beginning to come ashore, and then dominate the news for 2 days as the Abraham Accords is another big news story out of the White House. And I felt like the Lord put in my heart, the land of Israel is for the descendants of Sarah, not the descendants of Ishmael, or Hagar and Ishmael. Sarah, Isaac, and their descendants, not Hagar and Ishmael and those descendants. So even though they made a big deal out of the fact that this is called an Abraham Accords, the God of Israel was allowing a hurricane, technically named Sarah, to hit the U.S. at the very time the Abraham Accords was introduced. Next slide, please. Well, during this coronavirus, like many events, there's cause and effects that lead to other things. The coronavirus global pandemic is like we've never seen. The Bible speaks of final day pestilence, pandemics, and things like that. And I think Mark Hitchcock taught on that this afternoon. And you know, this is there. We've never had anything like this. Maybe the Spanish flu in 2018, but this is affecting life as we've never had in our lifetime. We've never had anything affect every man, woman, child in our country and around the world. It is absolutely like nothing we've ever experienced. And I'll go into a little history here, how the globalist and the World Economic Forum people are going to use this for their advantage. Moderna, who's developing one of the vaccines, the Pfizer mRNA vaccine, and Moderna, you know, a lot of you all have heard about Bill Gates and his interest in vaccinations and vaccinating a lot of people. He has a tremendous amount of money, and what after research is Bill Gates provided $20 million to Moderna, to the company Moderna, to develop this RNA vaccine in January 2016, and he committed up to $100 million. And he said that this includes the HIV antibody project, which this China virus, has HIV injected in it. This coronavirus came out of the Wuhan biological laboratory, I'll get to it just shortly, in China. This is a a bioweapon virus. And I stay in close touch with Dr. Francis Boyle, who is the one that authored the 1989 Bioterrorism Act. It was that George Herbert Walker Bush introduced and was unanimously passed by Congress. And I was asking, I'll get to it shortly, but I talked to him a lot, and he goes, this is a pandemic. It's a bioweapon. It's been injected with HIV antibodies, and they've been able to use nanotechnology that they were able to get from the Chinese, they were able to get it from the chemistry department at Harvard, Dr. Charles Cleaver, that was arrested on January 28th for providing China nanotechnology and other things, who was actually on the payroll of the Chinese Communist government. So that's what Dr. Boyle says. We have an HIV component. We also have the nanotechnology, which this makes coronavirus much more virulent. The next day, the next slide, Dr. Fauci, who's very close to Gates and that group, and as Dr. Boyle calls them, Big Pharma, they're friends of Big Pharma, and which he doesn't trust, which many of us don't trust. But Dr. Fauci at Georgetown University, 9 days before President Trump took office, said there's no question that there will be a challenge to the coming administration in the arena of infectious disease. Fauci said during this pandemic preparedness, in the next administration speech, he said that this needs to be taken very seriously, all but prophetically, for lack of a better word, stating that the next administration is going to be facing a pandemic of significance. He was confident that we're going to see this in the next few years. Did he know something? Why did he make that comment? 9 days before the inauguration, he'd never made that comment before. Okay, in the next slide, Bill Gates, in January of 2018, speech, Gates said, and the mRNA vaccines are likely to be cheaper, easier, and faster to make than traditional vaccines. This would be particularly helpful in containing epidemics, whether they occur through the nature or the result of an intentional biological attack. Y'all have probably heard this. They've never used mRNA as a vaccine. Pfizer and Moderna, who both supposedly have 90% approval or 90% success, are integrating a vaccine type that's never been used before. I won't go into a lot of the medical and scientific aspect of that today. Probably a lot of you already are aware of it, but nonetheless, we're watching it carefully. Next slide. What's very interesting is I continue to study and watch Gates. An event, this is called Event 201, on October 18, 2019, in New York City, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Economic Forum, and Johns Hopkins University put on this global pandemic exercise of what to do and how to manage a pandemic, which is ironically something that started hitting us about 90 to 120 days later. Incredible timing. They have this big event. Fauci predicted it in 2017. They have this big event at the end of 2019. And then starting in February and March of this year, the pandemic of size and magnitude like the world has never seen happened. Very strange. And then also, December of last year, quantum dot tattoo was completed. The work on the quantum dot tattoo was completed. It was done by a gentleman that had been at MIT but finished his work at Rice University. And he said the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came to us and said, hey, we have a real problem knowing who's vaccinated. And the purpose of this is to be able to put a light over the top of this. Once this is injected into a wrist, that will determine just with a light going over the top of whether someone has received the vaccine or not. I mean, this is like stuff we've been expecting, but now we're seeing it firsthand. So, Quantum Dot Tattoo. Rice University and MIT developed this for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The Wuhan Institute of Virology is a biosafety level 4 lab. I just wanted to throw that out, you all. This is, we have a couple in the United States. There's one in Canada. There's one in China. Russia has one. I think Israel has one. Basically, this is facilities that investigate the most dangerous pathogens and have the maximum biocontainment levels. For the purpose of basically, okay, China, we have one, or we have a couple, you have one. Okay, kind of keep everybody honest by letting everybody know, you hit us, we'll hit you type thing. Dr. Boyle said these things should all be shut down. There is no reason for these things. Matter of fact, the SARS pandemic came out of this same facility, very sloppy facility, and it did not come out of bats, and it did not come out of that fish market. It sloppily came out of this bio safety level 4 lab in Wuhan. The State Department had been warned 2 years before that that this was a very sloppy facility. We found out later that some of the things that were inserted in this virus came from the University of North Carolina, Dr. Barrick, who had worked closely with the Batwoman of China, who worked for the Chinese military. And there's a long story. I won't go into detail, but I've studied this in great detail. Even Fauci was, I think, through one of his facilities, put $3.5 million into this facility for the purpose of cooperation on this pandemic. But no reason to go into too much detail. But anyhow, this is really kind of ground zero. This facility in Wuhan, China. Next slide. The Microsoft company, you look at that number there, WO2026, that's their 666 Microsoft cryptocurrency system using body activity. This is a patent of Microsoft it's a device a user may sense body activity, and body activity data may be generated based on the sensed body activity of the user. And this is one of the things that are being put in place to monitor health, pandemics, viruses, and all kinds of things like that. Okay, the next one, came across this a couple months ago, Richard Rothschild of the Rothschilds of London, put a U.S. patent application to biometrically detect COVID-19 virus and others through smartphone readings, like through an iPhone or through a Google phone, one of their phones. And this is his patent. He has numerous patents. If you put in Richard Rothschild patents, you can pull up a bunch of these. And how interesting is this? June 19 of this year, he puts a U.S. patent in for this, which basically will be able to monitor people through their cell phones to help detect those that have had the COVID virus or have the COVID virus, who have not had the COVID virus, who have not had the COVID virus vaccine. It's just not going into too much detail, but it's just another example of what's taking place behind the scenes during this pandemic crisis. And the next slide, ID 2020. This is ID 2020 is the purpose of building a new global model for the design and funding and implementation of digital ID solutions and technologies. There's no other multi-stakeholder effort focused on user-managed, privacy-protecting, and portable digital ID than ID 2020. Microsoft, Accenture, and Gavi are three of the big sponsors of this. And I might add, you probably know this, Bill Gates gives hundreds of millions of dollars each year. I think it's 100. The United States gives hundreds of millions. Gates gives, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's tens of millions of dollars annually to the World Health Organization as well. It's the United States, Bill Gates, and then the Chinese government, which I think gives $30 or $40 million a year to the World Health Organization. We'll go into that tonight, but you know what we're talking about. Okay, the next slide is a passport. The World Health Organization, along with the airlines, along with the World Economic Forum right now, are talking about a passport that you will be able to, that you will have if you want to fly. Like Qantas Airlines a few weeks ago said that no one's going to be able to fly Qantas without having proven that you've had a vaccine. And they're working close with the International Airline Association to develop something of this nature, a digital passport. This is all in the preliminary process. A lot of time and effort's being put in this, but this, I'm afraid we're seeing where it's going pretty fast. You're going to be able to go certain places if you've been vaccinated. Initially, they will say, okay, you don't have to be vaccinated, but we want to test you that you haven't had COVID-19 for the last 72 hours. And they'll... So it's moving in that direction, unfortunately, that this digital passport will be something people will carry just like a passport. Okay. And here is the Center of Disease in America, CDC's COVID-19 vaccination record card of when you took it, when you need to take it again. And, you know, initially they probably won't force people, especially with these new vaccines coming out. But here in Virginia, where we live, the head of health, the health department for Virginia, says once we have a proven vaccine, we're going to require everybody in the state to take it. In New York, early last year, a court decision said that New York residents cannot use a religious reason not to take a vaccine, and that all members of the state of New York or all citizens of New York must have no excuse. If the state determines you need to take a vaccine for public safety purposes, you have to take it. And supposedly, according to Alan Dershowitz, if the United States government says you need to take a vaccine for the sake of public health, then they can force you to take it. So, we see where it's going. Texas is probably one of the safer places to be. But, if this ever happens at a federal level, it could get very, very concerning. Okay, the next one is the new kit that's going to be sent out. You've heard the last couple of days and then today that Pfizer and Moderna are getting ready to send out a tremendous amount of vaccines to, we're using FedEx and UPS to Walgreens and CVS and other places like that. So this is the kit, the documentation, the paperwork, on and on. And then next slide, Israel's health minister, this is interesting. They asked him last week, can you force people on November, can you force people to take the vaccine? And he kind of alluded to the fact, no, we can't at this point. You can't in Israel. But he said that one day maybe governments will force people to take vaccine, or maybe Amazon will, or airlines will, or banks will, and that you won't be able to buy or sell or trade without the vaccine. So this sounds very Revelation 13, but anyhow... none of this is a surprise. We're moving toward the Lord's return. Here is Klaus Schwab. He's the gentleman that started the World Economic Forum. He believes the pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world. The rumor, initially they were supposed to have their meeting in Davos, Switzerland, like this coming January, like they do every January. But due to the COVID and also due to the fact they didn't know who the next American president was going to be, they are going to have it in Singapore in May. So the plan is to, you know, if this continues, this strain or other strains of the coronavirus, at some point there's a possibility that people are going to have to stay at home, and we're going to have to create a reset, and large central banks are going to allow a lot of people to forego debt, but at the same time start receiving weekly or bi-monthly checks from the government. So this is part of the reset. Jan Merkel and others have done a good job of covering this on our radio program, and this is just one of many things that I'm following, but this one is very serious, and it could happen possibly next summer. There was a good article that I had in my news report. I put out a news report every Friday, and there was a Britain part article, and it said, what's standing in the way of the Great Reset is President Trump. He would be the one that would be in front. That's part of the risk of having a Trump presidency going forward, is that Trump would oppose this. And with that Trump out of the way, then things could happen very, very quickly. If he was not president, and God forbid that Biden and Harris were president, vice president, this reset would very likely accelerate quickly. There's some pretty radical people that Biden's talking about being his health team. And then the next slide, please. The Great Reset is very thought out. It's very comprehensive in many different areas of life. And then it's thought out extremely detailed. Okay, next slide. And then the Great Reset Initiative will be discussed again in Singapore, May 18th through 21. What's interesting is the World Economic Forum is really reaching out to the Asian countries right now, trying to isolate Trump and his way of doing business. And then the next slide shows this. Klaus Schwab was in China this, or actually yesterday. I pulled this up yesterday, that China's been leading the world. How about this statement? China has been leading the world in terms of fighting the pandemic. The founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum stated in Beijing. He actually said it on the, it looks like Saturday, it says Saturday here. He also called for a concerted effort to seize the opportunity to have a new beginning in our global cooperation and globalization. Okay, next slide. I'm going to move into this. The election 2020, we're really living in a period of time where truth just does not matter. It does not matter to a majority of the people that I work with in the media here in Washington, D.C. and around the world that I observe, that it doesn't matter if the election was stolen. They are discounting anything. They call everything ridiculous, a sore loser. It is absolutely unbelievable what's being uncovered. At the same time, the lack of interest in it. So I've got a. Frank and Tony are going to play about a 25, 28 minute video here that's going to give you a real good example of how elections are stolen. It's by Kevin Freeman, who's there in Candler, Texas, and Patrick Byrne, and they'll give you details of what's taking place. And we're going to share in this video the White House aware of, and was even aware of it even before they started sharing some specific details. So, gentlemen, would you start that video?
It was about a dozen years ago. It was right after a contested election. Barack Obama had just taken the White House from the Republicans. Joe Biden was the vice president. I was concerned because there was all this manipulation going on. And I got a call from an interesting guy, a PhD from Stanford, mathematician, brilliant man, mentored by Warren Buffett, mentored by Milton Friedman. Anyway, he called me and he said, hey, I've been following your work on naked short selling and all the things that you're doing. And I'm telling you, you're on the right track, and let me see how I can help you. That was a dozen years ago. The man was Patrick Byrne. It was interesting. I saw him on a media interview just a couple of days ago, and I said, hey, that's Patrick, the guy who helped me 12 years ago. So I got in touch with him, and I asked him to tell us what's been going on with all of this election fraud. Join me in the Economic War Room, where we speak with Dr. Patrick Byrne. Patrick Byrne, welcome to the Economic War Room.
Kevin, good to see you again, sir.
Good to see you. Hey, for full disclosure to the audience, Patrick and I have known each other for a while. It's been about a dozen years. We worked together in combating naked short selling. And we've invited Patrick into the NSIC Institute. In fact, he was one of our initial benefactors. Our first big gift to get the Institute launched came from Patrick. And he's spoken at our training events. So a lot's happened, Patrick, since we first got together, and even a lot more has happened since you left Overstock.com.
Indeed.
I'm surprised when I saw that you were jumping in on this. I know you've got the background in mathematics and all of that, but what about all of this intrigued you to get involved in election fraud as an issue?
Well, I view this as the completion and the final act of a chapter that started 15 years ago, frankly. And you know that I jumped from Overstock.com a year ago and came forward about my involvement in certain matters. To me, this is the last act of that play. I knew that they were going to do something this election, and it's too much of a backstory to know why, but I knew that they were going to do something. Around July, August, I fell in with a team of cyber professionals, and let me tell that side of the story too, which will answer get to your bigger question, which is in Dallas, 2018, there was an election that was compromised. There were so many irregularities in it. The government of Texas had a governor's blue ribbon panel, and they hired this cyber team to study what was so strange about why all these irregularities in the Dallas 2018 election. So that team had 2 years to put together what the rest of America has had about 20 days to understand. And that is that there's about a dozen ways you can hack these systems. They're quite porous, so I got mixed up with them and a related cyber group in August and started funding things, and then it kind of turned into a bad news bears, we like to call it, where it's various cyber sleuths and hackers and military intelligence personnel and investigators and just honest, concerned citizens. And it turned into this bad news bear. So we had a lot reverse engineered before the election even went down. In fact, the sideline is a footnote to research someday. They had a couple briefings, multiple briefings in August, September with the Department of Homeland Security, and CISA, the cyber infrastructure group, refused to attend the meetings. The group that is in charge of signing off on this stuff refused to attend the meetings within the DHS.
That's shocking.
Yeah, kibosh.
The same group that said this is the most secure election in history refused to look at it. You know, we actually had White Hat Hacker on the Economic War Room 2 years ago, codenamed Jekyll, and he walked through all of this stuff on our show 2 years ago, and we tried to send it to people to take a look at. It was all documented, and they didn't even pay any attention. It's very sad.
Well, it's sad, or it's coincidences this big, maybe aren't coincidences.
Yeah, no question. So you got, you said this is a 15-year story for you. I know that you've got the Deep Capture blog, and you've covered the criminal activity that's been in our financial system for years, and you found it. You uncovered it when you were heading Overstock because they were manipulating shares and doing the very same naked short selling that I found foreign actors doing in order to take down our financial system. Tell us how that morphed into this.
Well, I have viewed it as, I think the oligarchy has two wings, and one wing is the financial elite, the financial system, and the other wing is the deep state, and those are the two wings of the oligarchy. And so I've been on this, and that was the, actually the full story is up on Deep Capture, but I was sort of given an assignment in 2006 to get to the bottom of those two things. And who gave me that assignment? It's all written up there on Deep Capture. But so to me, this was all related. And I was actually offered a bribe 2 years ago to keep silent. And I knew that they were going to, because of that, they asked me to keep silent until this election. And I knew, so I knew that this election was going to be hacked. And so I was out there with a group of people trying to set traps for it and reverse engineer it as quickly as we could. So the truth is, we've had the rough outline of what happened. We knew by November 5th or 6th. And then there was sort of a week of getting data and pulling data and humping the numbers, as they say, and then coming to D.C. and starting to offer it to the mainstream news and to the campaign and to the people around President Trump. As you can guess, the mainstream news not only shut a door in our face, they shut a door and they welded it shut, and you know they do not want to know about this. But people around the president were interested. Sidney Powell had pretty much figured it. She had sussed it out on herself. What we showed up with was sort of the missing data pieces. She had the picture of how it worked. We brought in the missing pieces that were basically the data and the cyber side of it. So that's how it all sort of came together.
Yeah, and one of the things I picked up on an interview, and knowing you personally, you're a diehard libertarian. And yes. I heard you say you did not vote for President Donald J. Trump. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was never a never Trumper. My attitude towards him was the same as when President Barack Obama got elected, which was I didn't vote for the man, but he's the president, and didn't matter one whit to me. The day after Obama got elected or the day after Trump elected, he was the president. And so I did not vote for him. I'm a small L libertarian. I'm not really a huge member of the party. But Milton Friedman used to define himself as a small L libertarian, a small R Republican, a libertarian Republican, both with small letters. That's probably a good statement of where I am.
Yeah. Well, and you also have the Stanford PhD. I know that you were friends with Milton Friedman and Warren Buffett. I mean, you've got an intellectual capacity. And bottom line is you looked at all of this, looked at the statistics and the data and the information. You certainly understand computer systems. I mean, having built one of the biggest online retailers in the world, this all looked funny to you, right?
This is my mother's milk, and it's easy for me to see what happened here, and this is far easier to hack than Venmo or PayPal, anything like that. In fact, the hackers I'm working with describe this. They rate this now, the Dominion system, on in terms of hackability or security, on a scale of 1 to 10, they put it at a 2 and maybe a 1. I mean, anyone, I can walk you through. There are so many. There's 8 ways from Sunday you can hack these machines. It's ridiculous. Well, almost makes you wonder who certified it.
Yeah, well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to ask you to walk through some of the findings that the hackers came up with and some of the things that just really stood out, the top most important elements of why this 2020 election was hacked. We can prove it, what you've seen, and that sort of thing. So take a break, and we'll come back with Patrick Byrne.
Our next president should not be chosen by the media, big tech, or a single political party. He should be chosen by the counting of every legal vote. We, the people, must defend the integrity of our electoral process. We must ensure that an unlawful vote by one does not disenfranchise the vote of another. Let's make sure that we take the time to get it right before we declare a winner to this presidential election. Protect your right to free and fair elections. Visit everylegalvote.com.
We've been speaking with Dr. Patrick Byrne, the founder of Overstock, a guy with a PhD from Stanford, a guy that was buddies with Warren Buffett and Milton Friedman. And we're talking about some of the unusual things that his team, a team he worked with, found in the 2020 presidential election in particular. So, Patrick, tell us, what has the research uncovered?
Well, what they did was, in a sense, the Democrats are correct in that they keep saying the fraud wasn't widespread. Well, it was very strategic and very focused. It was indeed focused, not widespread. It was focused on 6 counties. They figured out that if you hijack like carjacking, if you election jack in six counties in America, you can steal the nation. You don't have to steal the whole nation, just steal six counties. And those counties are the ones where Atlanta, Philly, Detroit, Milwaukee, Maricopa County, which is Greater Phoenix, and Clark, which is Greater Vegas. You steal those six places, or even just a few of them, you flip the states that they are in, which flips the Electoral College, which flips the nation. So really, stealing the United States comes down to stealing six counties. But boy, in those counties, they want what I call full-on goon. And that's those are the six counties that you hear about this crazy stuff, everything from them shutting down counting in the middle of the night. Whoever heard of that? And shutting down counting in Atlanta and make everyone go home. But some of the Republicans didn't go home, and they stuck around, and they got movies of people sneaking in with backpacks and such filled with ballots. So that general plan happened in all those six places, things like that, along with other kinds of fraud and Sharpie ballots. In the last week or last few days, actually, we uncovered even a side of it I've not made public until today, but it was that beyond – I've been saying that publicly for about 10 days. Beyond that, they did another kind of cheating where they went – they basically took places that were already blue, deep blue, and made them even more intensely blue. They also took places that were red, very red, and made them just a shade less red because no one would notice. So they took counties, and we know of at least two states we can document this, where there were heavily red counties, and they figured, you know, if we go up to a place that's 66% Republican and we steal, so there it's only, we steal 600 votes, 300 votes from this town, that town, so it ends up only being 61% Republican. You know, it's still going to look like, wow, overlap. It's not going to look strange to anyone. And so they stole small amounts of ballots in these rural areas. What they didn't do, and they were smart, is they didn't take a place that was just a little bit red and flip it blue, because that would get too much attention and people staring. But they went to places that were intensely red and made them a little bit less red by stealing these rural areas, by stealing small batches of votes in different towns. And then they took big cities that were heavy blue, and they made them heavy, heavy blue.
You know,
so that was the strategy.
That's their answer. The whole answer is, oh, we clearly couldn't have been stealing here, because look, Trump won all these counties where our system is operating. But that's not a valid answer, is it?
Correct. We can establish what the expected vote should have been within a fairly narrow band, looking at such matters as voter registration in that county over the 4 years since the first election. And that is generally a very good predictor of what then is going to happen in the election that follows. And it is in most of the country, but in certain counties, you use that and you can predict what should have come to Trump and what did come to Trump. And there's a marked difference. And they clearly had this strategy. You can even see it geographically isolated. And then we have sent people into those counties and we have gotten the goods. I mean, we have physical evidence. We have obtained the physical evidence of this, because these machines do create auditable trails. And we have acquired physical evidence which proves absolute proof of fraud. Like we've put in for emergency order. This is all shown up in filings for emergency orders with judges over the weekends. But the heart of some of those emergency filings that are going on is that kind of hard proof. And I'm talking about like the actual physical proof.
Yeah.
So
that's
just what they did. Go ahead.
That's breaking, because that's what everybody's saying. Well, where's the evidence? I said, there's plenty of evidence. Well, where's the proof? You're saying that we have somewhere, someone's got the proof. They've gone to look at the machines. Because I know, I mean, I understand the logic argument. You can't get 80 million votes, the more than any other presidential candidate in history, and win the fewest counties of a winning candidate in history. And you know, those are statistical anomalies. But what you're saying is that somebody's looked at the machines, validated that there was theft that's taken place, looking at the logs and the tapes and the drives.
Right.
That is amazing. And the Trump legal team has this.
Yes, the Trump legal team has that. I want to emphasize that the Trump legal team are a bunch of smart people. They don't need us. We probably just accelerated things a lot. They had figured out, they had smelled skunk, and they had sort of put together what had happened. They had put it together in a legal way. We showed up with the missing pieces to the puzzle, the data and the hard evidence and sort of the technical explanation of how what happened happened. They knew what happened. They didn't know how it happened. We showed up with the hard evidence of how it happened. Yeah, and we have, I mean, at this point, there's all kinds of, these guys who are saying, where's the evidence? They don't understand that there's all kinds of evidence. There's testimonial evidence in the form of affidavits. There's documentary evidence. We have, where there's video evidence, we have it all. We have the tapes that show things that have been changed. We have hundreds and hundreds of affidavits. We also have the understanding of how you would, thanks to this group that did the deconstruction of the Dallas election, we knew how they would go about doing it in these 12 different methods. And so we really knew exactly what to look for in each place. And what do you know, you see, and it all dovetails beautifully. If you were going to use these machines to hack an election, you would expect the people who participate, both the voters and the precinct workers, to have certain experiences. And what do you know, they did. We have affidavits from hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands at this point, who did have those experiences. And you would expect certain statistical irregularities. And what do you know, you get these, I mean, outrageous quadrillion to one statistical oddities, like the chances that you would go and win the Powerball lottery and then go back the next week and win it again. The chance you would win two in a row like that, well, that happened. Things that outrageous happened in numerous precincts and numerous counties. So we have it. We have them dead. We have them dead to rights. There's no question in my mind. I guess I put things this way. I used to think 2 weeks ago that the possible outcomes were a Biden presidency, a Trump presidency, or a civil war. Based on what we have now, I can say confidently there is no way Joe Biden will be seated as president. There's no court. If the Supreme Court turns a blind, and this will all end up there, if the Supreme Court turns a blind eye to the proof that we have, then there will never be election integrity again, because they're then signaling it isn't what Article 2, Section Clause 2 or whatever says. It's you do what you want. There's, at the end of the day, no repercussions. If they let that stand, then the goons will never be stopped again.
Yeah, well, we're going to cover that, and we're going to cover what's happening. You know, you're right on the Powerball. There would be an immediate investigation if somebody won the Powerball two times in a row, and they would stop the check instantly. And this is that sort of effort. We got to get it to the Supreme Court. We'll talk about the path to the Supreme Court. We'll talk about what we should be doing about our elections, but we need to take a break, and we'll talk about that next.
Our children will ask how we acted when we could choose to stand for free and fair elections. Back in 1961, Ronald Reagan warned we would face such a moment.
The freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Wouldn't you rather tell your loved ones that you helped keep America free?
Welcome back. Well, we left off with Dr. Byrne. We were discussing the findings of his forensic research and the analysis that he's done that said, you know, it's like winning two Powerball lotteries in a row to get the outcome that the media is telling us has happened. And so I want to go back to that. Patrick, tell, you know, it is an impossibility, and yet most people in America just say it's over, let it go. Why shouldn't we do that?
Well, let me run some numbers by you. Imagine you were in an era that was 96%, a city that was 96% Democrat, and you had 100 people come in randomly and vote. The chance that all 100 vote for Biden are still, you know, it's 1.6%, and the calculation is 0.96 raised to the 100th power. It's 0.16%, or 1.6%. That's 60 to 1 against. The chance that you could have 1,000 people come in and vote all for Biden, if 96% of the city were Biden. 1,000 people voting Biden in a row, that's about a quadrillion up to one. That's about the chance of two Powerball victories in a row. There's an area in Pennsylvania, he had 130,000 votes in a row. That's the same as the chances that if I say you go somewhere in the world and pick one grain of sand, and I'll randomly go pick a grain of sand, and what are the chances we pick the same grain of sand somewhere in the world? That'd be about those. He got 580,000 votes in a couple spikes in Arizona. And by the way, these things always happen in those weird periods where they shut down the voting tabulation and told everyone to go home is when these weird things happen. One of them in Pennsylvania, another way to see it, he had 580,000 votes in four spike uploads of ballots. And of those 580,000, 3,000 were for Trump and the rest were for Biden. So it's 99.5%-ish for Biden. This doesn't happen in nature. And also what doesn't happen, those machines that did the uploading, they should have been able to upload about 50 to 60,000 ballots an hour, and yet in one 90-minute period, they uploaded 300,000. They ended up getting 580,000 in. So they're physically uploading faster than the machines. And we have it down to the serial number of each machine in each location, and we know their capacity. You add it up, it could have been 50 or 60,000 ballots, and yet they somehow uploaded 300,000 in a 90-minute period. Should not have been able to happen. That tells you there's all kinds of gimmickry going on. And, you know, we can talk about the forms of the gimmickry, but that's not people feeding ballots into a machine. That's uploads and electronic stuff going on and resulting in outcomes that are beyond quadrillions to one, beyond winning the Powerball. It'd be like winning the Powerball four times in a row or something. And then this all happens, what do you know, just when they kick everybody out and said everyone has to go home and sleep and we're going to get some rest. And they kicked it and they sent goons to force the Republicans out. And what do you know? Some of the Republicans they stayed out, but they filmed. And what do you know? They saw people come in with backpacks, heavy backpacks in the meantime. You don't have to be Fellini to see how all these dots line up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And it didn't just happen in the one county. It happened in multiple counties, almost simultaneous, same spike, almost coordinated, using what appears to be the same algorithm.
And, oddly enough, it's all the counties that are on that list of the counties they have to cheat. If you just cheat these five, six counties, you flip the right states, you flip the Electoral College. It happened in just those places. Yeah, it's just gotten silly to even have hearing people say, well, where's the evidence? You know, there's all kinds of different evidence that all marries up together beautifully, from testimonial evidence to video evidence to statistical evidence, to the evidence of the capability of the machines as manifested in their manuals and how this all can be done.
Well, the good news is you've got some of the data from at least one or more of the locations. But what concerns me is you look at Georgia and you've got this order to keep all the Dominion systems intact, not wipe them out. Then you've got the order, I rescind that order. Then you've got a new order. What happens in Georgia? Because the intention is, and they did this in 2017 in Atlanta, they wiped down their voting system. It wasn't the Dominion systems then, but they wiped it down. They're trying to do that now, and I've heard that's happening in Atlanta. What's going on in Georgia? Do you have any insight?
I do have quite a bit. It's intensely corrupt is the thing to know about Georgia. It's intensely corrupt. Another thing to know is I spoke with a very credible person 2 hours ago whom I've gotten to know through this, and they are bringing in fresh absentee ballots. They're manufacturing ballots off site and bringing them in. And they're doing that this morning. This is Monday morning. You're not going to play this till Thursday. I tell you, they have been filmed bringing in fresh absentee ballots today, which is, I think, at least 5 days past where all of that was supposed to be stopped. They are manufacturing fresh absentee ballots. Another thing you need to know is these Dominion machines, the readers also have little printers in them. So you feed a ballot into a Dominion machine, it can actually print a vote. It can print a vote, and not only can it print a vote, it has a library, and this is in their marketing materials, it has a library of natural-looking marks. So they don't just print a perfectly round circle that just perfectly fills up the circle. They actually advertise they have a library of different marks that make it look like a human.
Why would you do that if you weren't trying to cheat? That makes absolutely no sense.
It reminds me of, I remember once with my dear departed brother, we were sitting at a bar, and it was really at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We had just finished haying on the farm, and we were sitting in this bar down the road. And the guy, the bar, as we were talking, he's getting set up for the night. He was pouring rail liquor into his shelf liquor bottles as he was talking to us for half an hour. And finally, my brother said, "You know, I'm not sure you're supposed to be doing that, buddy, but I'm really sure you're not supposed to be doing it in front of us." Well, similarly, I'm wondering, why are they putting in their marketing literature, you know, we can actually, our machines not only can print onto the blank ballots, but we can print on in a way that makes it look like it was a human. What that means is any machine that's been compromised, if any ballots have run through it, those ballots are now compromised, unless you're going to get into forensic analysis of inks and checks. And so those ballots, you can recount them all you want. You don't know what was on those ballots when they came in. And given how easy it is to compromise these machines, either through, if you ever had physical access, it's child's play. There's a slot in the motherboard that should be soldered over. It isn't. Anyone with physical access can, for a few seconds, pop a chip in there. That machine's compromised forever. Same, anyway, there's a malware called QSnatch. You can Google ZDNet, which is a technology journal, had an article in July called 66,000 Dominion Machines infected with QSnatch. QSnatch takes the credentials of people as they log in, the administrators, and sends them to China. So everything bad I just described can not only be done by bad actors in Maricopa or in the counties that Atlanta, it can be done by somebody sitting over in Xi'an, China, at that military base where they hack. So people over there can be playing with these dials and such. It's just insane we let our country get to this point.
Well, you know, that's an important point, because there is an executive order and there are laws in the United States against foreign interference in our elections. That's a basis and a reason for the president to put out an order demanding that all of these things be impounded so that they can be examined and we can get to the truth.
He should be doing that. Georgia's trying to wipe. They came out on Friday and said they want to wipe all their machines. They're trying to wipe. We have to, if the president has that power, he should be using it, because all over the country, we can tell him just what he needs to seize. We know what's there.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, I wish we had time, but I'll just ask you one question. Would blockchain solve this if we had a shared ledger?
Blockchain solves all of this. Blockchain solves. There is a company called Votes, V-O-A-T-Z, and at my last company, Overstock, we provided the angel money. I have no ownership anymore, so it's not to my own benefit. I'm saying this. I have zero ownership, but Votes. Blockchain can solve this. Basically, what we're learning, once again, what you and I learned 10 years ago with Wall Street, is all human institutions are corruptible, because people are corruptible. They can be bought, and whether you're talking about regulators or senators or congressmen or journalists, or maybe judges, they're all for sale. There's one thing that even the elites with all their money cannot corrupt, and that is the laws of mathematics. And blockchain runs on cryptography, which runs on the laws of mathematics, and the goons cannot, even with all the money they have, they can't cheat the laws of math. So ultimately, a blockchain system will solve this. And I think we're going to find out, America, that we may be quite a bit, our collective will may be quite a bit different than what we've been being told for about 15 or 20 years. I think there's far more of this been going on at a local and state level than we ever had any idea. We know, by the way, besides what's going on now in the presidential election, they're stealing congressional seats. No one's paying any attention to this. But in Nevada, California, Virginia, and Texas, there's overwhelming evidence that they're not just trying to steal the presidential seat. They're in the business of shaving and slowly moving Congress over in their direction, picking off seats using these methods and technologies.
Well, you know,
so that's a lot to think about.
We're going to want to ask you back, Patrick, to the Economic Forum to talk about blockchain and all the potential it has beyond just elections. But on the election, I don't know if you've seen it, but we've got a website, a coalition of us pulled together called EveryLegalVote.com. And And I hope that you'll take a look. I hope all our viewers will take a look. Also, economicwarroom.com/myvote, where we interviewed the hacker 2 years ago, and he told us that all this was going to happen if we didn't fix it. So, bottom line is, Patrick Byrne, thank you so much for all that you're doing, what you did to help with solving the problems on Wall Street and rooting out the corruption that was there, and also rooting out the foreign influence that was there. You know, we've been on that for years now, trying to get China control out of our markets, trying to get the deep state out of controlling the finances of America. We're still working on it, and thank you for all the work that you've done there, too. So, thank you, Patrick Byrne.
Back at you, Kevin Freeman. We've been comrades in the same struggles for about 12 years now, and it's really it's always great to be in touch with you, sir.
Thank you.
Let's do it more.
Thank you.
Have me back anytime.
Thank you. So what we're seeing play out is perhaps the most intense economic warfare you will ever see, and that's the battle for the control of America is largely about the money. Tens of trillions of dollars are literally at stake. And if we lose integrity in our elections, we will lose America. The progressive agenda is frightening, and they are fighting with great intensity. And the plans they have are despicable. I mean, they're openly talking about re-education camps, limits on speech, intentions of taking permanent control of the voting process, whether by machines or removing the Electoral College or lowering the voting age or making new states or packing the Supreme Court. These are real agendas that are openly being discussed. You know, what we see as a marketplace, our enemies view as a battle space. You can get all of this information in the battle plan that we prepared for this episode at economicwarroom.com. This is Kevin Freeman from the Economic War Room.
Well, I'm glad you all had a chance to see that video. Kevin and Patrick really understand the issue that we're facing in this election. And it's fortunate we have some people that are very, very aware of this within the administration. Not sure how this is all going to play out. But I wanted to, first of all, I'm very excited about Texas's suing of Wisconsin and Georgia and Michigan and Pennsylvania. This is an enormous deal. And also, I haven't confirmed it yet, but I understand there's seven other states that are going to join Texas. It's not confirmed yet, but I heard it just a little bit ago, and that could be very helpful to Texas, so they wouldn't have to take this on their own. Also, at the top of our website, watch.org, I posted a Jay Sekulow's interview on Facebook with his perspective, and he said, this is the one, the case we've been waiting for, meaning the Texas case. And then if we have, supposedly, hadn't confirmed it yet, Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi, South Carolina, and South Dakota joining Texas. So this would be great news. I'll go into just a little bit more who's behind these voting companies, and then I look forward to taking any questions that you all might have. The next slide here, Dominion Voting Systems. You all have heard of Dominion often. Dominion was bought by Staple Street Capital in October of 2018, along with a couple Dominion executives that became part of the new Dominion. Staple Street has 75.2% ownership. I've seen some SEC filings that looks like the Chinese government through banks, through UBS, has provided maybe $200 million in 2014 and possibly $400 million this year. These are SEC filings. They're not confirmed yet, but it looks very, very interesting and suspect. But nonetheless, I need to dig into it further, but those are SEC filings. The chairman of the board of Staple Street is William Kennard. He was general counsel for the FCC from 1993 to 1997. He was the chairman of the FCC during Clinton's second term, November 97 through January 2001. After Clinton's time in office and left the FCC, he was the managing director of the Carlyle Group. It's a very large multinational investment bank that has a lot of Chinese money behind it, and some very influential people here in Washington, D.C., David Rubenstein and others. It was interesting, the Carlyle executive, David Rubenstein, interviews of Larry Fink of BlackRock, and also Schwartzman, who is also the CEO of BlackRock. BlackRock is the largest investment company in the world. They manage $6.8 trillion in assets. They said it's time for Trump to go. Schwartzman and Fink, whose companies made an enormous amount of money during President Trump's 4 years in office. And then also Jamie Dimon of Chase Bank has just recently called it's time for Trump to move on and concede, and we need to get on with getting ready for the new Biden administration. What's also interesting is Kennard was Obama's U.S. ambassador to the EU from November 2009 to July 2013. The United States had never had an ambassador to the EU, but under Obama, Kennard was the man. Kennard is now the chairman of the board of the AT&T Corporation. He's a chairman of the AT&T board. AT&T owns CNN. So you can see where his background in communications, networking, venture capital, Carlyle, the chairman of Staple Street is also a former Clinton official, a former Carlyle official, and we're looking at more and more details about the Chinese relationship with this group, but we've uncovered a lot. The next file is Smartmatic. You've heard a lot from Sidney Powell, possibly, on Smartmatic being involved in the voting machines. Smartmatic had a company called Sequoia that they were forced to sell by the U.S. government. The three gentlemen's name at the top here were from Venezuela. They had relationship with Hugo Chavez and Maduro and supposedly helped both those guys become elected through their Smartmatic software. Smartmatic created a company called SGO a couple years ago, and the chairman of the board of SGO is a guy named Lord Mark Malik Brown. He at one time was the vice secretary general, or it's number two man at the United Nations. And also, when he was at the UN, he rented an apartment from Soros at $7,000 a month. And Brown is an associate of George Soros, Open Society, and other organizations. So they have a close relationship. Peter Neppinger, who is the board chairman of Smartmatic, is a member of Biden's transition team. And there's other organizations, too. It's very complicated. We understand that possibly the Smartmatic software is in the Dominion machines. We don't know all the connection. At one time, the Dominion and Smartmatic were in a lawsuit against each other. But nonetheless, you have to unravel a lot of things. But these are players. Dominion, Smartmatic, and Skydal is one of the other organizations we're studying. Okay, the next slide, the safe harbor deadline was today that the states had basically all the states have certified their election, that if the certification had not been challenged or thrown out, then you can't do anything with them any further. But I understand, and I haven't confirmed this, but I understand, I think Sidney Powell was talking about the other day, if there's a fraud situation with the state, then the safe harbor deadline does not give them safe harbor, a particular state, if there was fraud that was proven. The Electoral College will meet next week, next Monday. The date, by this date, the state governors report election results to Congress via certificate of ascertainment that identifies which candidate won the state, as well as the state of electors appointed to the Electoral College. The Electoral College then meets and votes for the president and vice president and sends a record of votes to Congress. The Trump legal team plan is to get Biden under 270 votes. If there's a challenge for Pennsylvania's 20 Electoral College votes, Georgia's 16, that's 36. They're hoping that Wisconsin looks very favorable. I think that's 14, 15, 16. Arizona, I think, is 10, and Nevada, I think, is 6 or 7, something like that. But the initial idea was to get Pennsylvania disqualified. There's just tons of information on Pennsylvania that hadn't gone where it needs to go yet. And also a lot of Wisconsin, 200,000 false ballots. And also Georgia, 10,000, 12,000. Plus, that's the difference there. When you look at all these states, there's not that big a difference in the vote totals. We've had those in our news report. We'll go into that tonight. But in every one of these swing states, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, the Trump administration or the Trump campaign says they have more than enough fraud votes identified that would allow them to win every one of these states. But the main thing is, you got a couple, get Biden under 270, it goes to the House of Representatives. Each state gets one vote. The Republicans control 26, possibly 27 legislatures. So technically, Trump could get 26 or 27 votes at the House. Or each state just gets one vote, and then the Democrats will get the balance. So that's one of the ideas and plans to get Biden under 270 and attempt to win the Electoral College vote by through the House. The Senate decision would go to the Vice President. Whoever won the Senate would identify the Vice President. And I'm not sure the exact breakdown there. But the main thing is for the president, that's exactly what their plan is. Okay, be more than happy to take some questions. I've covered a lot of territory tonight, and there's just a lot going on right now. It's an ongoing full-time job, almost 24/7, trying to keep up with everything right now. So I look forward to any questions you might have.
Hey, Bill. Okay, they're going to ask questions on this computer, okay?
Okay.
You good?
That sounds good.
Okay.
Got plenty of time.
Hi there. I'm from Wisconsin and took part in the Milwaukee County reelection count. So I saw the actual vote irregularities. But my question is, on September 19th, 2019, President Trump put into effect a state of emergency if there was foreign interference with voting, and it's still in effect right now. Kind of.
Sound better a little bit back a little bit better. In terms of international. It's an executive order. I think the one you're talking about is the executive order pertaining, if there was international influence in our elections, then, we have a great cause. And he put that in place and for a reason. I don't know if y'all have heard some of General McInerney's and General Flynn's interviews. There's no doubt that there was foreign interference in our election, and they're going to really challenge that. Also Wisconsin. We understand that it could be as many as 200,000 false ballots put into the system, and I understand that the Trump campaign feels very, very good about the proof that they have of how it happened in Wisconsin. Unfortunately, Ryan Priebus is there kind of overseeing things, so that looks pretty good for President Trump. How many? What was that again?
Indefinitely quarantine ballots to circumvent voter ID laws. So, not a 10 were in some of the words I was counting, but indefinitely quarantined, and that way they didn't have to provide any proof of identity or registration.
Amazing. Amazing.
This is, but I have heard people like Michael Savage and others talk about martial law because of the seriousness of the issue, where our whole constitutional republic's at stake. What authority do you think Trump has, like, as no other choice, you know, to do something like that?
Well, that's a good question. General McInerney addressed that. General McInerney addressed that in an interview with Brandon House a couple weeks ago. You could possibly put in Google General Flynn and General McInerney. And General McInerney said, number one, let's prove the fraud and get President Trump elected. But if not, there is a good chance that he can show the foreign interference and possibly declare a national emergency. And also a possibility of martial law. So General McInerney, who's a three-star general, incredibly fine man, went into detail of phase one, phase two. And if phase one can't be done legally in the courts, then he really said that the foreign interference was so significant that our nation is at risk, and he had no problem with President Trump doing something of that nature in the event of, because it's provable, let me put it this way, it's provable with some of the affidavits that Sidney Powell has provided in Michigan and Georgia, details of the international influence through the Dominion voting system in the election.
What can you tell us about the five security men that were allegedly killed in the German, computer server farm takeover?
Well, that's a good question. General McInerney was probably one of the first that believed that did happen. I've heard various stories. Number one was it was a CIA operation and a Defense Department operation. And then I heard it was not that case. It actually went through State Department and Special Forces, and that's where I think General McInerney alluded. He'd heard that. It wasn't confirmed that we had five Special Forces members that were killed in Frankfurt when they grabbed that server. That one is very interesting. I don't have the answer on it, but there's obviously a lot of interest in what took place in Frankfurt a couple weeks ago, right after the election. And I might add, as you probably saw in the video there, the Trump administration has been aware of what's coming. They have monitored it. They know who they can trust and who they can't trust. You know, the Homeland Security cyber expert that's been on 60 Minutes, Krebs, how to pronounce his name, let me put it this way. The cyber group and the board of directors that oversees that group are the voting system company operators. They're part of the group that said this is the, and oversaw it. So President Trump's aware of what's going on. Just based on that video tonight with Kevin and Patrick, they know what's going on. The question now is, how do you accrue this to a victory for President Trump? And, you know, America's cities were locked down on the night of election in the event of a President Trump victory. And I'm thankful in one regard that it didn't happen that night, because it's given us an opportunity to fully understand the depth and breadth of this corruption for those with eyes to see and ears to hear, and for a better understanding of just how corrupt this is. It's just hard for a lot of us to comprehend this, the depth of this, but it's very significant.
What is your take on the DOJ and Attorney General Barr? He seems to be silent.
Joe? Yeah, I think, you know, it's frustrating. I think a lot of us were expecting the Durham report to come out in October. Bill Barr spoke to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville. I think there was a lot of hope that Barr was going to be helpful, and Durham was going to have his report done. I mean, how, I mean, look what General Flynn went through versus all these Comey, Brennan, Clapper, Susan Rice, Samantha Power, you know, and all the other cast of characters. None of them have served time. It's a joke. But there is a entity or element within the Justice Department, the FBI, with the help of the Democratic Party and 90% of mainstream media, that are completely in opposition to Trump. And it's frustrating. It really is frustrating. And I think what's happened is there is a, in Washington, there's a Trump fatigue. I think that the media has done a good job of helping produce some of that fatigue. He's unpredictable. People in Washington, even in Wall Street, like predictability, and President Trump's unpredictable. And but we all appreciate what he's done, what he's taken on. Yeah, there's some things he says from time to time we wish he didn't say it that way. And he's pretty good at stirring things up. But look at him. I think one of the great analogies was the day that Bob Mueller was on Capitol Hill giving testimony, looking at him, and then looking at Trump on the South Lawn of the White House. I mean, who just went through three horribly tough years? Trump looks like he hadn't aged at all, and look at Mueller. It just was unbelievable, the kind of pressure. I don't think anyone can comprehend the pressure that President Trump's been through and handled it quite well under the circumstances. It's remarkable. I tell you, he's got a lot of prayer. He's got a lot of prayer behind him, and it's going to be a very interesting couple weeks, to say the least.
Asking about, what about Barr?
Well, I don't know. Trump's not very happy with Barr right now. He's not happy with the comment. It's kind of taken out of context to a certain extent. He said that he has not seen any fraud that will overturn the result of the election. And the fraud development is still happening. So that really, really annoyed President Trump. There's a rumor right now that Barr might step down before he gets fired. I don't know. For a while, I thought they had a really good relationship, but I don't know. President Trump's a tough guy to work for. He's a tough guy to work for, but I think what happened is that I think it's frustrated a lot of these. Look at how well the Republican Party did in this election. He was on the ballot. Look at it. You know, they didn't do that well in the midterms. He wasn't on the ballot. But he was in the ballot. The House picked up anywhere. Republicans picked up 12 to 13 seats. The Senate did well. Those races did well. In a lot of ways, this was a very good race, a very good election for the Republicans, and Trump should have been part of the victory. And I think that's what frustrates him and others. But President Trump knew they were going to try to do this, and they accomplished it to this point. So Barr, I don't know what's going to happen or how long. But I just know President Trump isn't happy about Barr.
I was just curious. I didn't quite get your connection between the hurricanes, the natural disaster of the hurricanes, and the Trump peace accord. Were you actually making some connection with that? And I'll let you answer.
Yeah, I've written a book called Eye to Eye. I first wrote it in 2004 and updated it in 2007. Or six, and then I updated again in 2017. I noticed that when we apply pressure on Israel to divide their covenant land, we have these enormous catastrophes in America, usually the same day or within 24 hours. They'll hit or they'll begin. And the perfect storm, 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Harvey, all these record-setting, the key here is record-setting events. And I noticed the greater the pressure we applied on Israel to divide their covenant land, the greater the corresponding catastrophe. And in my book, Eye to Eye, documented 127, 128 events. And there's been, you know, probably about 10 since President Trump took office. I mean, this is the best friend we've ever had in the White House when it comes to Israel. I mean, Israel's best friend. But nonetheless, when that land, when they start talking about dividing that land, are creating an Arab state in Judea and Samaria, catastrophes happen. And these are the biggest in the history of our country. And I notice also the greater the pressure on Israel, the greater the corresponding catastrophe. And that's the connection.
Are you implying man-made or supernatural?
Well, you know, you hear different things about some man-made, some supernatural. It seems to be supernatural, but I can tell you, when there's a record-setting billion-dollar catastrophe, watch what the White House is doing with Israel at that time. I know I've heard about the Russian thing and the weather. I've heard about that, but I think what's important here is when we have a record-setting event, watch what we're doing, the White House was doing with Israel at the time of the event.
And last question, just because, well, from me. Just because it's so popular, everybody's talking about it, is QAnon.
Well, I think I have some friends that have been in Washington for a long time. Some friends in the intel community, others in ministry, others in politics. They think that some of the things that he says are accurate. Some of them think a lot of it's accurate. I think what happens with guys like this, sometimes there's an overactive imagination, and some of it's just too far-fetched. But I have some friends I deeply respect that say they've learned a lot from some of QAnon's revelations. So I there's so much, I see so much of this doing what I have been for over 27 years. And I try to just say, Lord, what should I know, and help me understand this. If there's anything that's credible here, let me know. If not, let me know as well. But I try to pick up stuff. There's patterns. You see patterns. You see behavior. You see actions, activity. And then by that, led by the Holy Spirit, you start connecting your own dots, led by the Lord. And so with all that said, I've seen things here in D.C. and even now that, you know, you grow up loving our country and loving Washington and appreciating it for so much. But we're living in a tough time here. And I tell you, we have so much riding on the outcome of this final outcome of this election. I don't even want to think of the alternative of Biden and Harris. I don't even want to think about it, but hopefully we will get there. But with all that said, oh boy, you got an element. I've never seen spiritual warfare in my life like I'm seeing right now on all levels. This is, I think in many ways, as we talked about, that we're getting very close to the Lord's return. And we're seeing a level of principalities that I've never seen before. And it's exciting, ominous, but we know that God's sovereign and in control, so that gives us hope. Hello, John.
Hi. How can we get this material that you just had presented?
I have some of it on our website. I'll be putting some of it out. I just did this in the last couple of days. I have some of this in my weekly news report that goes out every Friday. But I will put these slides up in the next week. So right now, watch.org, as you know, under there's an eye to eye category. A lot of the Israel stuff is under eye to eye. You just click on that, and all of that is there. And then as far as some of the other details about what I shared tonight, as far as a PowerPoint, I don't have that finished yet, but I will. I just pulled that all together. I've been aware of it. I've written about it in my news reports for most of this year, but now it's time to put it up, and I will. Thanks.
More questions? I want to know how your wife is doing.
Thank you very much. He's doing well. It's been a bit of a challenge for my sweet wife, but thank you for asking. Just keep praying for her. The warfare is intense, and as you all know, physical is part of the attack. So doing well, having some radiation, and hoping to continue to do better. But thank you all for mentioning that. Please pray for Claudia. I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think so. Hopefully not as well. But no, that can't imagine that. He'd fire her. Or try to. Okay, great. Claudia and I miss being with you all. It's always a treat. We miss being with you all.
Hi, Billy.
Hey, Tommy. Hey, good to see you, brother.
Something like that. Do you think Trump is going to do any military activity between now and January 20th?
Oh, boy. I've had 3 texts tonight since I've been on about some aircraft carriers off our coast. I texted a friend of mine in the intel community. I don't know, Tommy. It's some pretty credible stuff that's coming. I don't know. You know, I get a lot of this stuff over the days, over the years, but it's possible. Possible. Not sure how it's going to play out. China's mentioned as part of it, but yes, that's a possibility.
I guess that's it at this point.
Thank you all very much. Tony, thank you. And God bless you all.
See you later.
Okay, thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. Take care.